This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two, Sharp Money, live from the D in downtown Las Vegas. Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with you for the next 2 hours. Very excited to talk to Landry Locker in just a few moments. Host of The Locker Room, covers all things Texans. But before we do that, Dustin, good thing just to kind of go over what we've talked about in this first hour leading into what we will talk about with Landry. Houston Texans, currently the favorite to win the AFC South. They are odds on to make the playoffs. Everything is just positive. And like, you can't really find a lot of negative storylines from Houston this offseason, but maybe just a little bit too overpriced after what was an unbelievable rookie year from CJ Stroud.
Well, that is precisely why I'm cautious about going in on the Texans the way a lot of other people have. And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just one of those people that gets very nervous I'm nervous about how much I love the Eagles. I'd be nervous that everyone else loves the Texans as much as I do, because here's the deal, and we'll talk to Landry about this momentarily. The NFL is filled with guys like Jim Schwartz and Vic Fangio who will never be head coaches again in their lives. So what do? When you do something well, a la CJ Stroud year one, they spend an entire offseason as a defense trying to shut you down. They're going to poke holes through what you do. They're going to make you uncomfortable. And it's very different when you catch people by surprise with how good and dialed in you are right away. It's another thing after the league has time to adjust to you in one offseason.
So let's bring in Landry Locker, host of The Locker Room on YouTube, covering all things Houston Texans. Follow him on X at Landry Locker. He joins us via the Progressive guest line. Okay, Landry, so we just tried to poke holes in what has been a very exciting offseason. I'm sure everyone down there in Houston is just giddy, over the moon to start this season. But let's try to temper our expectations for just a little bit, because coming into last season, if you were going to say the Texans are a Super Bowl contender, people would have gave you the side eye. But now it seems like that is just okay to be in that boat. Where do you land on the Houston Super Bowl bandwagon as we get close to start year two with CJ Stroud?
The Super Bowl bandwagon, I mean, I think it's decent value if you're looking to make a bet. But I think you guys made y'all's analysis before you had me on. I think it was excellent. And I think there's a tendency to overreact. And we actually talked about this with the general manager, Nick Caserio, last week, where, like, let's say that the Texans last year, let's say Indianapolis doesn't drop that pass and they score the touchdown and the Texans season ends up concluding. Or let's say they don't. And then let's say that the Jags don't wet the bed against the Titans in the final week of the season. You're talking about either the Texans missing the playoffs, or you're talking about the Texans having to go to Buffalo and play on Tuesday instead of hosting the Cleveland Browns. So I do tend to think that because we saw them put that thumping on the Browns, there's a little bit of an overreaction. And I actually think, because last year the Jags, the win total heading into the season was 11.5. And I was like, man, that's ridiculous. Like, we're overreacting there. And this year I look at the Colts and I see the Colts at 3.5 to 1 or whatever they are. They might have gone down to 3 to 1. And you talk about all the teams in the division getting better. I do think, like, the there is kind of a little bit of an overreaction with the Texans, but I do think they have a high floor. I just don't know if I'm ready to say that they have a Super Bowl ceiling yet.
And now, with all that said, Landry, there's no reason you shouldn't be excited about the offseason. It's one of the best offseasons we've had in recent memory, where an organization realizes the window with the rookie quarterback playing the way he did CJ Stroud, but also the contract. Let's surround him with everything possible here. They add Diggs. They add Mixon. And I think underrated is what this defense is going to look like, more of an imprint of what D'Amico Ryans wants to do. When you add how things went last year to this offseason of adding all these key guys, I mean, where do you see them making the biggest jump? Is it the offense taking another step, or is it this defense?
I think it's defense. I think it's Will Anderson. He's put on 15 pounds. He was hurt last year. He talked about getting kind of roughed up and physically dominated against Baltimore. So he's put on 15 pounds. He looks great. They're putting the pads on tomorrow, so we'll get a better look at that. Danielle Hunter on the other side, I think you can make a case that they might have one of the three best edge combos in the league. And I think the other thing about the offseason, on top of just the names they brought in, is the fact that they have a lot of guys who are under 25 that are inevitably going to get better. And CJ, Will Anderson, probably Tank Dell, Derek Stingley, when he's on the field last year, he was AFC Player of the Month, I think, in December, our Defensive Player of the Month. So I think it's the defense is where I think they're going to get better. It's going to be interesting to see if they can run the ball on offense. They brought in Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon last week, he wasn't at practice on Saturday. We figured it was a Veterans Day off, but he was not there again today. D'Amico Ryan says nothing to worry about, but they're definitely going to have to be able to run the ball better than they did last year. I think that would be the one thing to keep an eye on.
100% going to have to run the ball. And you look at the defenses they play the first 4 weeks of the season, Landry, Indy, Chicago, Minnesota, Jacksonville, then Buffalo's going to be a challenge. Then they go on the road. Week six, they face the Patriots. And week seven at Lambeau Field, that's the first time that they're underdogs, at least on the early lines all season long. Of course, the Bills, they get them at home. We'll see how Buffalo starts their season. I could see that one flipping back to the Bills being a small favorite. But it looks like there is a favorable path to begin the year. But then, Landry, you look at the back half of this schedule. At Dallas on Monday night, at the Jets on Thursday night, short week traveling to MetLife. They go on the road to face the Chiefs and the Ravens back-to-back weeks down the stretch. It feels like it's a tough first-place schedule, and I think as we talked about earlier, they are now the hunted, not the hunter. I think that second half is where I could see maybe some slippage.
Yeah, the back end, the December is interesting because they're going to be coming off a bye, so they're going to get the Dolphins coming off a bye. Baltimore is going to have to play them on a short week on Christmas. So that's a little bit, I guess, if knowing that you have to play those teams no matter what, I guess you can make a case that it's better to get Baltimore on a short week coming to your place, and Miami coming off the bye. I'm with you on the schedule, but for me, I think it's as much about routine because last year, the Texans, their first 16 games were all noon Sunday kicks. So all 16 before they flexed that Indy game were noon Sunday. So they were 100% in routine. They had a routine going. Now they have six primetime games. You look at Indianapolis, their first 10 games of the season are all going to be noon Sunday games. And so I think that's another thing to keep an eye on. I don't know that these guys are going to be like the lights are going to be too bright for them, but I do think that there's no doubt that it's an advantage to have, you know, the same kick time 16 straight weeks. And I think that's another advantage they had. And that's not even factoring in what you say about the opponents, but I do think that's going to be something to keep an eye on how they handle that, because it's easy for a first year coach to have a team used to a routine when it's the exact same for 99% of the season.
Landry, I know you've been out to camp a few times now since things opened up. Early returns on Stephon Diggs, you know, he was happy in Minnesota until he wasn't, and he was happy in Buffalo until he wasn't. What are the early thoughts you've seen from Stephon Diggs so far?
Wide receiver one, to me. I mean, if you didn't like know what Nico Collins and Tank Dell did last year, I know that's been kind of a thing with fantasy coming up and stuff like that, but him and CJ, they're on the same page. We got to talk to him today. He's on his best behavior, Diggs, but I mean, him and CJ seem to already have chemistry. So I was wondering, like, do I want to take any of these Texans in fantasy football? And it's one of those situations where who's going to be one. I feel pretty safe in saying, like, a few days into camp, he looks like by far the best wide receiver on the squad.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Nico Collins, who signed like a $100 million deal or something in the offseason. Yeah. It was, and then you still bring in Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, the other big addition for the Texans this summer. It's becoming an embarrassment of riches. And Landry, I guess that's where we'll end this segment. You know, just put it in perspective. A couple years ago, right, fighting to be the worst team in the NFL, and now 2 years later, the turnaround. And it's something we see a lot, right? We go worst to first. There's always a worst to first team in the NFL, but the question is carrying it over, right? You go worst to first, and now you carry that momentum over into the following season. You make all of these additions. You go worst to first to now Super Bowl. Put that in context, what the last 2 years has been like covering this Texans team.
It's been football hell. I mean, it was literally football hell from 2020 to about like 2022. I don't think you say it happens, but you know, it's you have a guy who you think's a franchise quarterback. He demands a trade. You have two head coaches who probably have no business being in the NFL. Oh, by the way, that quarterback who wants to be traded can't be traded because he has all the off-field allegations. You have $50 million dead cap. You don't have first-round picks in 2021 because Bill O'Brien functioned like someone who didn't give a damn about the future of the organization. And then you kind of luck out because you go back and look at it, like, had Deshaun Watson been tradable, I mean, they might have drafted Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or Mac Jones or something like that. But because he wasn't tradable and none of these teams that had multiple draft picks like the Jets or anything, teams that might have been interested, you hold on to him and you're basically just paying him not to play. Then you finally trade him. Then you wanted Bryce Young and you end up winning that game. Some people say the win, loss, whatever the hell that was against the Colts. And then you happen to get C.J. Stroud. You use that draft equity that you had for Watson to trade up for Will Anderson. You get Tank Dell. And now all of a sudden it's a pile of players. It really has been like one of the most fascinating things. And I think a lot of credit is deserved. But I also think, as we know in the gambling world, sometimes that luck can help you as well. And I think they just had the perfect combination of luck, execution, and it's wild.
Landry Locker, not to be confused with Landry Lucker. Great stuff as always, pal. Covers the Texans on the Locker Room, the YouTube show. Follow him on social media at Landry Locker. Good luck this season, sir.
I appreciate y'all.
I'm going to talk on the other side why maybe there's a player on the Texans at 60-1 we should consider in an awards market. That's next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back, and we are asking you to check out VSIN.com. Why? Because there's all kinds of goodies up there. Best bets, betting splits. I was on the betting splits page this morning trying to find a winner in baseball, but you don't need to do that. You know why? Because Adam Burke, Steve Mackin, and among other experts have got you covered. Log on to VSIN.com, subscribe, and check it out. All kinds of stuff. I even saw Nigel Seeley put up Olympic soccer predictions. I mean, you want it, you got it. It's all at your fingertips over at VSIN.com. I know USA is losing here to Germany. What is going on? I'll be honest. Are we going to not? We're $5 favorite to win Olympic gold, Dustin. What's going on with the men's basketball team here?
I think we're just falling victim to the blitzkrieg again.
The blitzkrieg? What happened against South Sudan then?
No, this
come
is
up
not
with some gimmick for them.
I don't understand this. Look, when you invent the sport, well, actually, technically, Canada invented basketball.
That true?
I think Naismith was Canadian, but living in Kansas. I could be wrong about that. I'll Google it
for
later.
That's really impressive that you knew that off the top of my head. I'll be honest. You could have given me a million guesses. I never would have got Canada for creating basketball.
No. So, look, when you invent a sport, though, you should be the best at it. That should be the rules. And I think the SEC thinks they invented college football, and we'll touch on that now with Brooks Austin.
Brooks Austin on the phone? We do. SI.com director of recruiting. He joins us on the Progressive guest line. Follow him on social media at Brooks Austin BA. And Brooks, I'm excited to get your take on what's going on in the recruiting landscape across college football. But let's start with your other gig, the Dogs Daily lead editor. Obviously, that's referring to the Georgia Bulldogs. Were you a front and center for SEC Media Day? It's going to be a weird year in the SEC. It's going to be a weird year across all of college football. What were your takeaways from Media Day? Georgia, obviously, still the talk. Top dog in the SEC, but is that gap dwindling? All the tumult and the upheaval at Bama, what's going on in the SEC noteworthy heading into the year?
I think first and foremost, the removal of divisions will create what we – I don't think any more remaining like top dog where there's like clear cut. That team's so much better than everybody else because, like, for instance, Georgia, everybody kind of looks at Georgia. Is Georgia dog this year? Georgia's going to have to go on the road to Texas, Alabama, and Ole Miss this year. Oh, and by the way, play Tennessee and Clemson. Like, that's on the schedule this year. So if they survive that, yes, and go on to win a national title, they might be the best college football team ever considering the slate. But everyone across the conference has that going on. You look at Florida's schedule, it's really, really tough. You look at Texas and Oklahoma's schedule the next 2 years, it's fairly tough. With what they got coming to the conference. I think the removal of divisions will really remove this kind of power gap we've seen, this power dynamic we've seen over the last couple of, you know, probably decades really with the transition from Alabama being that quote-unquote top dog to Georgia now seemingly being that top dog. But in terms of the power gap, I don't know how much of a real difference there is between 1 to 2, but I don't think there really has to be, because 2 through 6 right now in this conference is really ultra competitive, and number one's got to see about almost all of those really competitive teams this year.
Now, Brooks, Carson Beck is back. And, like, full disclosure, I'm a New York Giants fan in the NFL. I want Carson Beck to be the next quarterback of my New York Giants. However, when I look at this season and you look at this offense with what's returning, it jumps out to me that there is no Ladd McConkey, there is no Brock Bowers, and those were two go-to guys in critical downs for Carson Beck. How much of not having those two guys do you see that making an impact on Beck's season this year?
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the history of Mike Bobo as an offensive coordinator, he's kind of always found one or two guys to feed the rock to. If you go back to his days at, like, Colorado State, for example, Colorado State put out 2 third-round draft picks at the wide receiver position during his time there because they just kept getting fed the rock. They had almost 1,200 yards receiving and went out to be drafted out of the Mountain West Conference. So this guy's history as a coordinator, and it's why he's worked so well in the college ranks, and particularly, to be honest with you, I don't think he has very much interest in pro ranks, because he has been very much so, hey, who are my best players this year? Who has developed into those alphas? Let's figure out ways to get those guys ball, you know, opportunities after the catch. And last year, yes, it was Bowers and it was McConkey, but those guys were very, very injured last year. Those guys were in and out of the lineup consistently. And if you look back at those games, for example, like Tennessee, neither of those guys was 100% at all. Ladd didn't play at all in that football game. Bowers was relatively hobbled in that ball game as well. Well, all of a sudden, this Dylan Bell guy pops out, and he has over 100 yards and a pass touchdown as well, and he's making plays, and everybody's like, hey, who's this Dylan Bell guy? Well, that's byproduct of your quarterback as well, but also your coordinator being able to really designate and design his opportunities for each unique, specific offensive talent. And honestly, guys, in my opinion, that's what coordinating is about. When I can see a coordinator do that, I know he's really, really in tune with not only his roster, but his abilities as a play caller.
We're joined by Brooks Austin, SI.com Director of Recruiting Daily Lead Editor for Dogs Daily. Find him on X at Brooks Austin BA. And Brooks, let's widen the scope a little bit. We've got an expanded playoff in college football. It's a new landscape across the board. I'm expecting at least one, maybe 2-3 lost teams to be in the college football playoff. Who knows? Maybe Georgia's one of them. It feels like to me you're going to see a lot of new blood, and I think that's going to make betting college football this year, especially from a futures perspective, very difficult. Do you think there's a team maybe at the top of the list as we're putting some national championship odds on the screen now? Teams like Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, of course, Alabama and Ole Miss, LSU and the SEC. Are some of these teams at a disadvantage because of the expanded field? Because usually they're expected to be at the top, and they are at the top. But now you open up the field to so many more contenders. Are there some of these top teams that need to be a little worried?
I mean, if you look at, like, just the shake of how everything went down with the schedule, boys, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Oregon nabbed both Michigan and Ohio State on the schedule this year in their first Big Ten kind of, you know, opportunity at the conference. I don't think that's necessarily ideal, despite the fact that I think Dan Lanning's roster and his coaching ability and the quarterback play, what we expect from Dylan Gabriel, should be more than okay. I think there's still questions about, you know, what's going on at Texas. Is anybody overlooking what LSU has got going on? Because, you know, Garrett Nussmeier seems to be at least a very competent quarterback. I'm not saying he's going to be what Jaden Daniels was last year, but do they have to be defensively on the other end? They spent about $4 million on their defensive staff alone this last offseason. So when you get really big money players and a talented roster like that at LSU, I'm not saying, but I'm saying, you know what I'm saying? They could be one of these teams on the outside that everybody's not looking at this year. But if you talk about futures, how about this one, okay? Look at the landscape of college football right now. Ohio State's got what looks to be a roster that they've got the chips pushed in all on. Ole Miss the same. Maybe Alabama's without Jalen Milroe next year. He goes to the draft. Georgia's going to have about 25 guys on their roster. What's going on with Kay Klubnik at Clemson, right? Okay, look at Tennessee next year. They're going to have a year 2 starter, all right, in Nico Iamalieva, and a year 5 guy in Josh Heupel fully having that roster back. And, oh, by the way, probably on the backslide of those NCAA sanctions. So maybe they'll finally be able to get back to the roster limits you know, without any type of restrictions from the Jeremy Pruitt era. If you want to grab a future, 2025 is about as open as it gets, and the only constant, the only thing that looks like it's going to be on stable ground at the quarterback position in that year is probably Tennessee.
All right, about 2 minutes here, Brooks. I don't want to get too caught up in the hype here, but I kind of already in the tornado that is Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And the fact that they have a three-year starter back in Jackson Dart at quarterback, they return three receivers, they had South Carolina transfer Antoine Wells, and the defense has been completely overhauled via the transfer portal. Do you think Lane Kiffin is serious enough as a head coach to get this team into the playoffs with all the talent they added?
I think he's certainly good enough of a coach. Seriousness is not anything that I would put in the in the description bio of Lane Kiffin. However, I'll tell you who is serious. Obviously, that booster base, that's a $25 million roster with what they did and what they retained. It's not everybody looks at the additions, but you hit the nail on the head. They got a bunch of guys that turned down, you know, third to fifth round evaluations to come back to school. That does not happen freely. The guys like Trey Harris's, they don't come back to college, without being paid. So that booster base certainly thinks Lane Kiffin is serious. And this is 100% an all-in approach this year out there in Oxford.
Yeah, I think the college – there's two teams in the SEC, Tennessee and Ole Miss. Those are the two teams that I'm really targeting in the SEC because I'm trying to find plus money prices to make the playoffs, Brooks, because I think, you know, you get a lot of these teams, the teams at the top of the list. I don't know if the books have fully adjusted to the expanded playoff field just yet. And I think there might be a couple of extra meat, you know, a little extra meat on the bone there with some of those yeses to make the playoffs.
I think Missouri is so safe of all of these teams in the conference. Just look at the slate, man. It's like, hey, can y'all beat Alabama on the road? And even if you don't, can y'all just win these games that you're going to be favored on? I'm serious. Look at the schedule. They didn't get Georgia. They don't get Ole Miss. They play Alabama. They didn't get Texas. They have to play Oklahoma, but it's at home. Like, they got the draw of draws in a year where they returned everybody and the quarterback, and they probably have the best receiver in college football.
And they're 5-0 to start. Well, 4-0 to start. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College,
Vandy.
I mean,
walk out the gate better
than UMass. They better be 5-1 after that UMass game. I mean, maybe they knock off A&M. Great stuff, Brooks. You got to hang for one more segment, bud?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
All right, let's see. You always ask them on air because when they say no, then everyone gets to hear them say no, and it's not just me behind the scenes. All right, great stuff. We'll get a little more. I want to ask you about my Nittany Lions. I'm a Big Ten guy. More Brooks Austin on the other side.
Oh,
Sharp Lord,
money. You're not going to like me after that.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back here. Final hour, Sharp Money on a Monday. We want to thank Brooks Austin. Did such a good job breaking down college football the last two segments. Thank his wife, too, for staying with us a few extra minutes there. But we're going to transition from the South college football hotbed to the Midwest and the Windy City. So we welcome in Mark Carmen, NBC Sports Chicago host and WGN radio personality. Follow him on social media at The Carm. Great to talk to you, Mark, because I think Chicago, you have a lot to talk about on the sports talk airways these days. It's been a rough year across the board, but lots of excitement now heading into the football season because the number one pick, Caleb Williams, you would think a better year than the Bears had last season. What are your expectations of the number one pick heading into training camp?
So, guys, thanks for having me. And look, as optimistic as Bears fans want to be, as much as I want to be, you know, doing a CHGO Bears podcast every single day, look, Bryce Young was the number one pick last year, and I'm not saying that Caleb's anywhere close to that, but it's possible, right? It's also possible that he's CJ Stroud. But if the Texans had had the number one overall pick last year, most people think they would have taken Bryce Young. So there is the crapshoot that is NFL quarterbacks, and I think that's why you see such a wide range on – you know, how the Bears will do this year. But there is no doubt that the talent level is there with Caleb and the ability to get rid of the football quickly and the arm strength and the understanding of the game should all be there. So, look, there's a lot of optimism in Chicago right now, and rightfully so.
Oh, you guys have been through it, man. you've been through it. Rex Grossman, yeah. Kyle Orton, Jay Cutler, and now you've got Caleb Williams, which is a totally different
Justin Fields.
Type
you throw
of
that name out there?
I think they've moved on pretty quickly from that one. So when you look at those scenarios compared to this scenario and you see the talent that they've surrounded about the Bears, what is the mindset from everyone looking at this organization that everything they've given Williams to be successful because of how things have gone in the past, how much do you expect that to pay off right away his rookie season?
Well, it's not just the talent level, which obviously is way up too. But if we just let's just go back to Trubisky. We'll take the last two. Mitch Trubisky wasn't supposed to start his rookie season. Mike Glennon was. He made it through four games on a $65 million contract with it. 18 of it was guaranteed. And they're like, oh, this guy stinks. Put Mitch in, which is not a great plan for a rookie quarterback. And then with Justin, they were going to start Andy Dalton. They did start Andy Dalton, and they had Nick Foles. They weren't planning on playing him that year. They were trying to squeeze out a playoff victory or a playoff appearance so Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace could keep their job. Well, Dalton gets hurt week two. Okay, let's throw Justin in there against the Browns. He threw for net 1 yards on an offense that wasn't designed for him. This offense is being designed for Caleb along with the talent. So that part of it is, to me, the biggest difference. You're starting week one. There is no playing around here. Tyson Bajan's the backup. Let's go.
Tyson Bajan. I have not heard that name uttered until last year when he came off the bench. And I didn't have like one like really yeah. great game. Hopefully we don't hear that name again for the rest of the season. Right, Mark? Across the defensive side of the ball, I really think that's where this Bears team is going to eat. I'm not saying monsters of the midway. I'll let you say it, though. But I think this Bears defense, which was a top 10 unit last year, you made a couple of nice additions in the offseason. Byard's name right at the top there. The secondary should be better. And, of course, if your offense, like sometimes the best defense is a good offense, right? Because the defense then gets a chance to stay rested and recharge for the entire game. Whereas with Justin Fields last year, it felt like they kept looking over their shoulder because they knew at any moment they're going to be asked to go right back onto the field. But the defense was very impressive last year. Will it be better this season, or is the same just good enough?
Well, if it is the same in the second half of the year, I guess it would be good enough. But I do think it'll be better because, you know, Montez Sweat came midseason and now he's here for the full year, going through training camp, all that, number 82 on your NFL top 100 list. That's, you know, impact guy that they didn't have to start the season last year. Throw in the fact that Tyreek Stevenson, who had a great rookie year as a corner, should be that much better. Jaquan Brisker going into his third year. Same thing with Kyler Gordon. Those guys in the secondary, super solid. They paid Jalen Johnson, rightfully so. Tremaine Edmonds, who got big money coming over from Buffalo last year, wasn't great, really. He was middle of the road. So I would think there's room for him to be better. T.J. Edwards had a great year last year, so hopefully that continues again. But their defense is still missing one guy who can get to the quarterback and kind of that three tech in the middle who can annihilate you. Jervon Dexter Sr. is the name that Bears fans are pointing to. Can he do it in year two? He started to come along in the second half of last year. But so there's still questions on the defensive line. On the outside, who's rushing the quarterback with Montez? And then on the inside, can they really get that push, collapse the pocket?
Now, Mark, a year ago at this time, most of America didn't really have an opinion on the head coach of the Bears, Matt Eberflus. Most people didn't really have a vibe, what he is, what he wasn't. They knew he was a coordinator. They knew he had success there. And now America's going to learn more about him because the Bears are going to be on Hard Knocks. And it does feel like this is a guy who evolved and got more comfortable in his own skin as the year went on a year ago. What has the Chicago media thought of Matt Eberflus, and is he on any type of a hot seat with a new quarterback coming in?
So I'll take the hot seat part first. I don't think he's on a hot seat. Like, if they win 7, 8, 9 games and Caleb has an up-and-down year, but his flashes are real and they look solid, I think Matt Eberflus will – then you could talk about a hot seat in year 4. Now, if they completely collapse, then that's a major problem for Matt Eberflus. And not the GM, because they would point at the coach for not, you know, living up to the talent that's in the room. But this is a guy who, you know, lifer coach, but, you know, linebacker coach, Dallas, defensive coordinator, Indianapolis. He was never front of the room as far as dealing with the media. And there were some really awkward moments with Matt Eberflus in the media where he was confused and stumbly and just, it wasn't great. And I, the, the word on the street is that the Flus has, you know, got some coaching around this, and he's just become way more comfortable and way more used to it. He was asked about it today at his press conference. And he's like, well, time on task. Like, look, I do this 4 days a week with you guys. So he's just become a better front-facing guy for the franchise, a little more easygoing. It's noticeable. He's changed his look. The dude looks like Brad Pitt in his late prime. I'm going to give him. So, you know, the Flus has done kind of a – it's been a makeover. Let's put it like that.
The Flus. I've never heard anyone refer to him as that, and now I cannot get it out of my head. So is he just looking more tan and slim these days, or did he change his look?
He's got – his hair is more poofy. he's got a – this is a thing. Like, he,
all right.
His beard is a – is just very well taken care of.
Wow.
This guy's a married man, but if we'll stick with the Flus theme, if the Flus was on the loose, I mean, it, you know, for 50-year-old women, maybe even younger, you know, very interested in this new Flus.
Maybe one day I'll graduate to that point with my vibe. I don't think I'm there yet. Mark Carman, CHGO Sports host, NBC Sports Chicago, WGN Radio, joining us now here on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on social media at the Carm. All right, let's switch gears for a minute. I know football is top of mind, Mark, but I think the Cubs had a nice little push right before the break, right? And then now we're seeing a nice walk-off win for them yesterday on the other side of town, the White Sox. It's almost a matter of when they're going to sell. Let's start with Chicago on the White Sox side. Are we going to see Garrett Crochet dealt before the deadline? And if so, any idea of where he might land?
So it sounds like that is going to be the case. And the usual suspects are in there, the Yankees and the Dodgers. Bob Nightingale had a report out, and Bob is very close with Jerry Reinsdorf, so he has very good White Sox information. And the Yankees were there with their top prospects, who they're now willing to include. The White Sox apparently want more than that because, you know, why not get greedy on July 22nd? You got a little bit of time, but apparently there's a bunch of interest in Garrett Crochet. So I do expect him to be dealt, and maybe with Luis Robert. The Dodgers were rumored in a monster package for both Crochet and Robert, which, you know, they're both – I mean, Robert's been signed, and he's under contract, so he is of enormous value to have an impact guy like that in his prime who's getting paid, you know, relative to what he should be getting paid, peanuts. So, you know, look, the White Sox are – you know, full in on another rebuild and coming out of this at some point. It's an awful time to be a White Sox fan in Chicago, that's for sure.
Mark, not a bad time to be you, my friend. CHGO Sports host, NBC Sports Chicago, WGN Radio. Of course, follow him on all things social media in the Windy City at the Carm. We appreciate the time. Good luck with the Bears season. I'm excited to keep a close eye on Chicago this year.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Great stuff. Mark Carman, there he goes. Yeah, I think selling the Cubs. I think the Cubs should sell. They're not going to, but they should. The White Sox, absolutely, are selling.
The Cubs are a team. You know what was interesting is I was very low on them coming into the year.
That sweep over the Orioles didn't help my cause.
No, look, I was low on them coming into the year, but then, like, they got off to an okay start, and then things unraveled very quickly and got away from them. And it just never felt like there was a complete cohesive plan with what they wanted to do. They kind of were patching pieces together, and I just didn't think they had the upside. But there was a point where I went, you know what? Is there a buy low opportunity on the Cubs? You can't touch that team. It is grossest. It's disgusting. And I don't know what they're going to do to fix it next season.
But here's the thing. I think we were hot and heavy on some of these Japanese pitchers, either pro or con in the futures market. The one thing I'm noticing, and this week is in particular, and we will talk a little bit of baseball before the end of the show. I'll give you a few nerfy picks. We'll dive into the futures market as well, and we've got a really good segment coming up in about 15 minutes with John Bowman, former baseball scout. He'll give us his picks tonight. But I'm noticing these pitchers getting extra rest. You see them come back from the break. They look great. Imanaga looks fantastic. Yep. But then you get him back on that normal routine where he's starting every 6 day, and then all of a sudden it's 2-3 months of that, the wear and tear. But then you give these guys 10 days off. That's why I think someone like Hunter Green tonight, wink, wink, on the nerfy. Like, just it. You give these guys 10 days. Imanaga looked like a rock star yesterday. What do you go, an 8 scoreless or something? But you go another month or two down the road, back on the normal routine, he'll go right back to hitter city on the other side. All right, we will get into a little baseball. I promised it. I teased it. I'll give you nerfies on the other side. Sharp money here on a Monday.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, we're back. Check out our website, VSIN.com. It's got best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, the betting tools, the guide. The NFL guide's out already. College football guide drops in about 10 days. Tons of baseball best bets also on the site tonight from Adam Burke and Steve Mackinnon, among others. All of it available at your fingertips. Just go to VSIN.com. Sharp Money on a Monday. Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, and our next guest. Very excited to be joined by John Bowman, former Major League Baseball scout. Baseball with Bowman's where you can catch him. Follow him on social media at JohnBowman11. All right, John, let's not waste any time because you've got picks on your card today. And I love when there's friction on the show. We just talked about the Minnesota Twins against lefties. My partner here, Dustin Sweetelson's on the Twins. I look at your card right out of the gate. Phillies over Twins. So tell me why Dustin's wrong.
Well, gambling's hard. I don't necessarily know if he's wrong, but I will say the main thing, and I know the Twins have been dominating lefties recently, especially over the past month or so, but the main thing for me here, Royce Lewis, Carlos Correa, Jose Miranda are all still on the IL. Those are three massive right-handed bats for the Twins, and have been having a lot of the production for them recently. Bailey Ober has been pitching well for them, but they go up against Ranger Suarez. I don't think the break could have come at a better time for Ranger Suarez. He was absolutely dominating out of the gate and then kind of lost some steam. But I think this will help him, the rest. And then both bullpens have been pretty iffy lately, to be honest. But the Twins have two relievers, Jorge Alcala, and one of their others has pitched 2 days in a row and could be unavailable, while the Phillies should have everyone available.
Yeah. Do you want to repute there? But I'll give you the floor first.
No, I think you made a strong case. I just think when it comes to the pitching matchup in this one, I don't like before the break the way Suarez was trending. And I think Ober is not sexy, but he is solid. And I've been waiting for this Suarez magic to kind of end here. So as long as the Suarez magic continues to end, I feel good about my side. But he made a strong case.
All right, John, let's move on. The Brewers, I call them, I don't know if you're a fan of the movie Rounders. You're a gambler. You've probably heard of it. Alligator blood. The Brewers have alligator blood. They're down early. Doesn't matter. Grand slams, they've got them. It just seems like anything that is required for them to win, they find a way to do on a daily basis. They don't have the sexiest lineup. They certainly don't have a very good rotation, but they figure out a way to win games. Their bullpen's getting stronger. Devin Williams should be back soon. The rest of the bullpen's been pretty solid, and you think they're a good bet tonight over the Cubs?
Yeah, definitely. That's my favorite play of the night. And then you could go the other way, too. The Cubs are the exact opposite of the Brewers right now. They're just finding ways to lose. They're not playing well. I know they got the win yesterday, but they had one hit through eight innings, and the Diamondbacks were without their top four relievers who had all pitched 2 days in a row. Shouldn't say without them. One of their pitchers pitched 3 days in a row, and he was the one that blew the save. So it's pretty obvious to see, you know, how rest can affect these relievers. But I like the Brewers here. The Cubs bullpen is still ridiculously injured. They're missing a lot of guys, Little, Wesneski. And then the Brewers on the other side, they should have everyone available. They just got Jared Koenig off the IL. And like you said, the Brewers are just finding ways to win while the Cubs aren't right now. I like the Brewers there.
Tobias Myers, a guy who doesn't have like overpowering stuff, but he gets the job done.
That's what
man.
I'm saying. He's alligator blood.
He's just a good pitcher because that's what they do. They find diamonds in the rough. They create these stars, right? They're not always able to pay them, but they do. Let's stay in this division for a moment here. Though, John, also Baseball with Bowman, all of his information on his Twitter at JohnBowman11. This division was there for the taking for Chicago. They were very aggressive in the offseason. You worked in the Blue Jays front office as a scout. What went wrong with Chicago and their game plan for putting this team together? Because of the teams in this division, it felt like they were making the biggest splashes and it is not working.
Yeah, and adding Craig Counsell, too, should have, you know, enhanced all of their qualities and their abilities. But it's kind of just been a perfect storm for them, to be honest. They really don't have many guys hitting. You knew Cody Bellinger wasn't going to have a career year like he did last year. Then you've got guys like Ian Happ, who hasn't been producing much. You've got some guys in their lineup like a Pete Crow Armstrong, Nico Horner, who they don't have much power. So they do get on base, but they're not going to get that big hit, that two, three you know, even grand slam that's going to, you know, separate them from other teams. And when they're struggling to bat and hit overall, that's what you kind of need in the middle of the lineup, is someone's just going to slug. Like I say, Suzuki has been underperforming as well. Their bullpen, like I mentioned, they have tons of injuries. I mean, they've got like 8 guys on the IL right now, a lot of guys that could really help them. And that's been hurting them as well, especially because their starting pitching doesn't get too deep into games. So they use a lot of their relief pitchers, a lot of innings for them. And that kind of, like I said, just makes a perfect storm for them. But that being said, they're also only like 6 games under 500 still. So it's not like they're totally out of it. They can still turn this thing around, but they've got to start playing a little bit better.
Let's talk about some teams that already have things turned around and you expect them to be adding at the deadline. And I think the most intriguing handicap with these teams, Dodgers, Braves, Orioles, among others, I think you throw the Cardinals in that mix as well, all probably looking to add at least 1-2 arms at the deadline. How does that impact the starting pitchers they're throwing out there now? I think it's always hard when you're looking over your shoulder. You're waiting for that next guy to come and take your job. Does that make handicapping these top teams over the next 2 weeks just a little trickier?
I don't think so. I think it does make it a little bit trickier because a lot of these players just in general are kind of waiting for reinforcements, right? Like they know if they've got a weak part of their team, you know, if their bullpen's been injured or not pitching well, they know they're going to add some pitchers by the deadline. So I don't want to like use the word cruising into the deadline, but a lot of these teams, they know that help is on the way. So there's not necessarily as much urgency. That being said, also a lot of these pitchers who are at the bottom part of the staff, like a guy say like Dean Kremer, who will likely be knocked out of the rotation. The Orioles are probably going to get a starting pitcher. He'll probably just move to the bullpen, kind of like they did with Cole Irvin and Albert Suarez. So it's kind of just getting those guys in a different role and being comfortable.
Can I spin zone this for you a little bit? Because I think we're all anticipating a lot of aggressive moves at the trade deadline, because it makes sense. There's a lot of teams in the mix, especially with the National League wildcard, John. However, with that said, because there's a lot of teams in the mix, there aren't that many sellers. There aren't only so many guys to go around to all of these teams. Do you expect us to get the blockbusters everyone's talking about? A Crochet, a Skubal, Luis Robert, Eric Fetty. I mean, I'm talking Eric Fetty like he's going to matter, but he's having a great season on a bad Chicago team. Are we going to get the splashes we're expecting?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question, especially when Major League Baseball went to having the, you know, the bigger wild card on both sides, is you're going to see a lot more teams competing and not necessarily as many sellers. So I don't know. Last year, we didn't really see that many blockbusters, right? It seems like teams are also trending towards valuing prospects and control more than necessarily having that top guy for, you know, a couple months or one and a half years, you could say. But even last year, we saw kind of the decline of the rental player, you know, or even just the value of the rental player. Teams aren't willing to give up that top prospect to get a guy for 2 months. So we see them kind of focusing in more on these guys with more control, which obviously brings in a higher return. So it'll be interesting to see some of these teams if they're going to move their top prospects or not.
Yeah, I always feel like it's a where there's smoke, there's fire situation. I've heard a lot of buzz on Skubal to the Dodgers. I've heard a lot of buzz on Skubal just period getting traded. I don't know if he's going to get moved. Is a guy at that level, it's harder to move a guy like that, even though the contract situation is relatively favorable. Whereas a guy like Max Scherzer, maybe a little bit easier to move him because he's, you know, the expiring deals and, of course, everything that goes on with younger players compared to older ones in the free agent market. If those two names are the first two to come to mind, am I missing anyone who might get moved at the deadline?
Skubal, Scherzer could be a good look. Crochet.
Yep.
I think Mason Miller. And then even staying on the A's, maybe like a Brent Rooker would be an amazing get for a lot of teams. You know, kind of Luis Robert's a good option. Maybe we'll see somebody on the White Sox, somebody else in the White Sox being moved, like a Tommy Pham could be an option. Yep. Maybe even like a Michael Kopech as a good value option. I know he hasn't had the best year, but he's obviously got the stuff, and maybe he'll succeed in more of a sixth or seventh inning role instead of as a closer. So I think we'll see a lot of more marginal moves this year. Not necessarily that those big blockbusters, but I definitely think some teams will find some value in those lower guys.
What about your Blue Jays that you work for, which they developed this core, and I don't understand how it hasn't worked. I love Bo Bichette.
He's
Vlad
hurt.
Guerrero Jr. No, I know, but he's had a horrible year before
even
he got
besides
hurt. And you like a play on their win total in season, right?
Yeah, I like their under. I believe it's at 77 and a half wins. It might have gone down a win or two since the break restarted after, you know, losing two of three in that series at home. But they're going to sell. They're going to be sellers. I don't think that they're going to go all in. I don't think they're going to move Vladdy. I don't think they're planning on moving Bo. Bo's, like you guys said, he's been injured. He's been having the worst year of his career. They're not going to move him when his value is at his least, you know, because no team's going to pay over the top for him there. That being said, you're going to see guys like a Danny Jansen being moved. He hasn't had the best year, but he's a good option at catcher. Maybe a George Springer, even though he's on a pretty bad contract, but he's kind of, you know, kind of starting to have a resurgence, but he had two home runs. That was yesterday, I believe. And then they're going to sell their only pieces in their bullpen too. You've got like a Yimi Garcia who could be moved, Chad Green. So I think they're not necessarily going to go full on rebuild, but they're definitely going to be retooling at this deadline.
Yeah, George Springer killed. The only loss I had yesterday was George Springer crushing a nerfy for me in the first inning. Cater Montero hung one. What was it? Well, the hung one. He just threw a grooved a fastball right down the middle. Great stuff, John Bowling. We appreciate the time, pal. Go follow him on social media at John Bowman 11. Baseball with Bowman is the story. Appreciate the time, bud.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
All right, we'll close up. Sharp Money on the other side.